Okay, and the recording has started.
Thank you very much, Samuel. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel on Tuesday, the 25th of March, 2025. My name is John Brunton, and I've been appointed chair for today's meeting. This is a formal meeting, and on behalf of the council, I acknowledge the traditional people of this place, the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation. For countless generations, they were part of the country on which we meet today. I also acknowledge those from other First Nations who are now people of this place. We acknowledge and pay our respect to elders, past, present, and emerging, and those who work for truth, justice and reconciliation. As we begin the meeting, I'd like to invite the members of today's panel to introduce themselves. As I said earlier, my name is John Brunton. I'm a registered planner here in New South Wales. I'm a fellow of the Planning Institute of Australia, and I'm a member of the World Heritage Body, the International Council on Monuments and Sites. The Minister for Planning has appointed me as one of the chairs of this panel. So I'll call on Sylvia to introduce herself first, please.
Hi, thank you. My name's Sylvia Correa. I'm also a planner and I am the community member on this local planning panel today.
Marjorie.
Hi, Marjorie Ferguson. I'm an expert member on the panel. I'm a registered planner and I'm also a fellow of the Planning Institute.
And Brian.
Hello, Brian Kirk. I'm a town planner, postgraduate qualifications in town planning and land economics, and I'm an expert member of this panel today.
Thank you, everyone. The first matter on the agenda is declarations of interest. We only have one item for deliberation today, and each panel member has signed a declaration stating that they are not aware of any conflicts of interest. In relation to the item under consideration, panel members have made themselves familiar with all of the relevant material. This includes inspecting the site and its context, reading the agenda and associated reports, and all of the submitted documents. And earlier today, the panel had the benefit of a detailed briefing by council officers where we went through all aspects of the proposal. Now, before I have one person registered to speak, and before I invite Paul to make his presentation to the panel, I need to address some housekeeping matters. This is a public meeting, and as you would have heard, everything that is happens in this meeting is being recorded. So I suggest that you exercise care with anything that you say in making submissions, and it's important that you keep your microphone on mute unless you've been requested to speak. Now, the panel members have carefully considered all of the material that was submitted, and the council's officers on the proposal raise issues which you probably wish to address. In particular, you should probably comment on matters that will be in a potential planning instrument, such as the floor space ratio and the provision of affordable housing. You probably don't need to explain the proposal because in responding to the council officer's report, you'll be able to explain what is proposed. So I suggest you use your time effectively. And panel members will be able to clarify any issues that they have through further questions. After the panel has heard your presentation, we will go into a closed session where panel will consider all the relevant information and formulate a recommendation which will be incorporated in the council officer's report. The decision of the panel will be published on the council's website by the end of this week. So let's move into the agenda item, which is the planning proposal PPAP /2024/0001, which relates to three lots of land described as 75 to 85 Crown Street and 116 Princes Highway, St Peters. This is a planning proposal that seeks to adopt a maximum permissible height of reduced level 51 metres, increase the floor space ratio to 5:1, and then enable the construction of 88 square metres of residential floor space at ground level. So I'd like to invite Paul to introduce himself and then to make a presentation. As I said earlier, panel members will probably have questions of you when you've finished your presentation.
Thank you, John. Thank you, panel members, and thank you, council officers. I think this is going to be quite a quick one, and I don't really have a presentation to put forward. Normally I would talking on a planning panel, but I think from my perspective, the process that we've gone through with the council officers now for over a year working together collaboratively on this project has been nothing but a pleasure, I would have to say. We've both worked well together, and I think the outcome that we've got to and the recommendations in the councillor's report is fully supported by us from a floor space ratio use perspective. So from my perspective as the applicant, I don't really have any further comments.
Well, perhaps we'll start with that. You're saying that you're happy with the 4:1?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be some other questions. One issue that's been raised has been the issue of light industrial use on the site and the potential conflict with the definition of shop-top housing. Shop-top housing can't be above light industrial. Shop-top housing, by definition, has to be above some form of business commercial use. Is that an issue for this planning proposal? Because the planning proposal doesn't seek to address what's permissible in that sense.
So I've got Ethos Urban on the line now. Sophie, are you able to answer that question?
Honestly, I guess that's right. It's been a while, apologies, since I've looked at the ground floor plan. There's only a component of the ground floor that's light industrial. The way that the ground floor was arranged or the focus was to ensure that there was still employment generating uses at ground floor. And so if that does represent an issue, then it might be that the use can be amended to just another employment generating use that's not light industrial. If that assists the panel.
Yeah, I think from the onset we wanted to make that space as flexible as possible for, like, whilst there are light industrial uses, there are users in and around the inner west that have showrooms and spaces that aren't of high I guess in whilst they operate under a light industrial zoning, the way in which and what they actually operate on a day-to-day basis wouldn't affect residential. And that was, I guess, the idea from the outset that when we first started speaking with council, we wanted to make the floor-to-ceiling height as large as possible to create flexibility. But again, we're open to whatever council sees fit.
Another question that we were considering was the relationship between this site and the land immediately to the north along the highway, which there's no proposal at this stage to rezone that land. And so we've been discussing, well, what would be the relationship if that land was rezoned? What would be the relationship to this land? Do you have any comments on that?
I think at the outset we did approach those owners of that lot. Their owner occupiers, they occupy it's a warehouse.
It's a hardware.
Hardware store. Yep. They weren't interested in looking at alternative uses on the site. So we did proactively speak to them, but they were happy operating on site as is. So that's all I can probably say.
Yeah, that's okay. Are there other panel members who have some questions? Marjorie or Brian?
Brian, you're mute.
Brian, you're muted.
We have. Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah, that's a habitual problem of mine. We had a discussion with the council before about why maintain the current zoning. So, Sophie, they gave us their rationale behind it, but can you just so that we grab hold of this, so why would you see it to be, let's just use the word, okay, to keep the current zonings over the land, since there are two?
I guess we didn't see a need to rezone the land to introduce a different zone, that it's better keeping the zones that apply to that section of that shopping strip as one, and that the focus was really on density and height.
So so you're okay with the idea that this would come into the LEP through a Schedule 1, through Schedule 1 to the LEP. So it would include land uses, additional land uses, and additional development standards.
Yeah, we did sort of we toed and froed about that issue for quite some time in preparation of the planning proposal, including presenting it to council as part of sort of pre-lodgement discussions. Whilst it does introduce a level of complexity, and there is being another layer in additional permitted use, it was the most sort of streamlined and straightforward way in this instance, rather than introducing a whole, a different zone entirely.
Another point we were discussing with council, would mind your thoughts about, is the question of whether a height limit should apply at all. Because what we're talking about is an overall FSR over the site, but what we have is, to support the site-specific aspects, we have a block diagram that proposes varying heights. So in the hierarchy of development standards, at the end of the day, height and FSR do not trump each other. So I can see a potential problem when we need to have these different graduations of height, that if we have an overall height over the site, that a future developer, whether it be your client or someone in the future, could claim that that's the dominant development standard that needs to be achieved. So we have potentially a mismatch between FSR and height.
If you're heading in the direction of there not being a need for a height limit here, and for that to be assessed on its merits, including also when we have an effective height limit due to the ANEF contours, that's certainly a conversation to have. I'm a Victorian planner, and there aren't many height limits throughout the planning framework there, and so I'm certainly supportive of there not being a need for one. But that is what has been put in front of you today to consider, and there is an effective cap on height there. So
yeah, no, that's all right. I was just interested in your thoughts and your opinion. So you've given me that, so that's great. So thanks, John. I might come back with another question, but at the moment that's where I'm at. Thanks.
I think Marjorie would like to ask a question.
Yes, I was just going to talk to you about affordable housing provision and public benefit generally. So, what do you consider public benefit in being provided by this proposal? Or do you see that in the form of the 10% affordable housing for 10 years, and given that council has an affordable housing policy of 15% and to be held in perpetuity. So I don't know if any of you want to comment on that. I know that council in its planning proposal has talked about 2% of the GFA to be held in perpetuity, but that's a bit of a far cry from the 15% that they have in their policy.
Like Paul also, if you might like to, or both, maybe.
Paul, yeah. Would you like to respond to that question, given the conversations that evolved with council over the course of their initial assessment?
Yeah, and I think it's a good question, Marjorie. And I think from the outset, we knew that when we were going to lodge this application, there needed to be a public benefit. So we put forward affordable housing from the start. I think one of the underlying themes of this site we need to understand is its own mixed use at the moment with current controls. We can lodge a development application and get an approval for 4 to 5 stories without any requirement for affordable housing. We spent a lot of time working with the team to just figure out what is the right height that actually makes it worthwhile being able to actually deliver affordable housing for council. And that's where we got to the 10% number based on that 5-to-1 FSR, and that was based on the 5-to-1 FSR. Council have since come back, and obviously there's been a change. Understand that council are at 15%, but a lot of the applications going through now are 2% in perpetuity. I think that's where we've landed, and we're supportive of that. I think if we were to revert back to a previous, we'd need to look at the percentages of affordable housing if the floor space was at 4-to-1.
Okay, thank you.
Sylvia, do you have any questions?
I have a couple. I guess just following on from the public benefit discussion, this is also separate to public benefit but linked, sustainability. So I think that the council put to you that there should be, not more than aspirational, but a commitment to deliver sustainability targets on the site that go beyond minimum mandated requirements. And I'm not sure that that's been a response has been provided in terms of what you could do on this site. I can see some PV panels on a reference design, but something that goes further than that. Has any consideration been given to that?
To be honest, Sylvia, no, we haven't. We obviously haven't engaged an ESG consultant to go through, but like any project that we work on, it's once we know there is the ability to have a project live, we will engage a sustainability consultant and implement sustainability initiatives across the site, which, a lot of them are pretty mandated at the moment.
Yeah, I guess it's at this point in time where the council is preparing potentially a draft DCP that they would normally be embedded in there to guide future development. So that's why I asked that question. But I do have another question. So thanks for that response. So assuming that the planning proposal moves forward with retaining the MU1 zone in the mixed use zone, I guess the task is going through what the zone objectives are. And so you go through the zone objectives and they prioritise employment generating uses, a mixture of uses like commercial, light industrial. When you look at the reference design, and I acknowledge what a reference design here is, it's to support your proposition of a particular, development potential on the site. But when you look at the drawings, I do have questions about how you've considered the viability of a, let's just call it a commercial use on the site. If you've had discussions with potential lessees or owners of that site.
Yeah.
So when I look at the drawings, these are some of the observations I make. There's quite a large area in the corner of Princess Highway and Campbell Street. I would share my screen to make this conversation a bit easier to follow, but it's a bit glitchy, so I'm not going to do that. Otherwise, I think I'll get booted out of Teams. But then you have this loading area, and so it's very clear that you can get your truck in and it reverses. But that looks to be the only area that you could actually have back of house and load into that large commercial space. Yep. So, again, I acknowledge these are reference designs, but because there's a task here about the zone objectives and retaining or providing employment-generating uses here, I'm trying to get you to help us kind of reconcile that objective. So how do you see the viability of a commercial/light industrial use on this site?
Yeah, I think, and I've done a lot of project in the inner west in light industrial uses, and have seen as residential development has been occurring across the LGA, even in the inner city, City of Sydney Council, you've got all these startup businesses that require high clearance space, whether they're furniture, ceramicists, any type of use like that. They're getting pushed out of the LGAs, and it was actually one of the directions we got from Inner West at the start, that we want some space to actually retain these up-and-coming light, call them light industrial users, but they're makers that require that type of space. That realistically, if you look at that stretch of the Princess Highway and you look at, you know, it's an MU1 zone, but have a look at what's actually activated up that elevation up Princess Highway. It's not working. Mm. They've put contact paper over the glazing. There's no retail activation. It's because they've delivered these 2.7 meter high retail spaces, and there's a 7-Eleven in one and an Australia Post on the other side of the road. It's actually not working. And when you do some analysis on what the actual tenant base is in that area, they need 4 to 5 meter high clearances to actually operate, because they've got bulky goods, furniture, machinery that needs to go into these spaces. So
I guess if I could just then at this point, yep, come back in. I think that's great, the double height spaces to, yep, provide that flexibility for those types of uses. But how are they, let's say it's a furniture showroom, like, yep, large scale installations of whatever, how are, yep, they going to get in and out without creating a conflict with the residential uses? Because you've got people moving in, people moving out, you've got waste collection, you've got storage, and the reference design, again, it's just a reference, yep, design. It just shows one little area where you could back in a truck and unload. There's no other access to the commercial space.
Yeah, and I think that's the reality of being on the corner of the Princess Highway and Campbell Street, in that location on that arterial road. I think that can be a condition that the traffic committee, we get when we get our consultant's report from the traffic engineer, he can deal with that then, can't he?
I think I'll just, the last thing I'll say on it, it's not a traffic issue. It's a spatial allowance issue that goes, yep, to yield, and it goes to commercial viability is the question. Yep. But thank you. That's good information. Yep.
At the end of the day, the ground floor retail isn't making money. It's to activate and provide employment generating use. If we need to lose space to create a bigger turning circle or a loading bay, we'll do it.
Okay, thanks.
Brian, did you have another question to ask?
Mute again, Brian.
Still can't hear you.
There we go. I'm slow to push the button. I wouldn't mind just getting it straight in my head. In the planning report, the planning proposal report, there's a comment that says that the proposal is not inconsistent with strategy, with current planning strategies. But that's not actually the test. The test is that it must align with current planning strategies. So I wouldn't mind hearing the 2 or 3 minute, I mean, I've read the planning report, I've read the council's report, but I wouldn't mind hearing the 2 to 3 minute summary of how it does align with the planning strategies for the area.
I think that might be a question for Sophie.
Mm.
And you're on mute.
It very well might be. I've also got Ben on the line here, who's been assisting with the project over the last 12 months. Ben, are you available?
Sorry. Yeah, yes, I am, Sophie. I'm just going through it as well, just to catch up and see where we mentioned that we're not inconsistent. I think the portions where we talk about inconsistency rather than consistency is when we refer to written advice provided from the pre-planning proposal meeting to be had with council. At that time, there were comments from council in the minutes saying the proposal is not inconsistent. And that was the terminology used. From that, we followed that on in the following sections of the planning proposal report to demonstrate how the project is strategically aligned.
Mm.
So I don't think it's the planning proposal nominating that it's not inconsistent, but that's just the terminology and the wording provided, which was copied into the report.
Okay. Well, I still wouldn't mind hearing the 2 to 3 minute summary as to how it is aligned.
Sure. Absolutely. There's, I think when we're looking at it, the key ones and the strategic mirror that we focused on related to the strategic planning statement, local housing strategy and the employment and retail land strategy. I think at the end of the day, we found that most of the objectives were satisfied through this planning proposal. There were various general terminology used in the strategic documents relating to greater housing supply, need for greater social connectivity, diverse and affordable housing, which we're seeking to put back in. Currently, very little housing and diversity is offered on the site. You have that small R1 portion. And we're looking to expand the diversity of housing provided on site. There's also looking at greater connectivity, 30-minute connectivity from transport nodes to services and housing, which we're looking, the site is incredibly connected to multiple, the bus corridors along Princess Highway, the St. Peter's train station, and other services along the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So greater connectivity in that term. Greater connectivity to open space as well, accessibility, being within close proximity to public parks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could go on further. I think that's really the summary and the crux of the argument.
No, it's the key points that I'm after, just to get that in a small bundle in my mind.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, John.
Panel members, do we have any other questions?
No? Not for me.
Okay. Well, I think that we've had all our questions answered. Thank you, Paul, Sophie, Ben. We will now adjourn to consider all the material that we've received, and we'll make a decision. As I said earlier, the decision will then be reported to council, but it will be available on the council's website by the end of this week. So thank you very much, and I'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.